Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casello, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy week one.
Happy week one. Happy game week. Happy stomp liberty into the next millennium week, whatever you want to call it. There's football this weekend. There was football last weekend, but not of the Syracuse variety. I am personally very excited. I know you are very excited. Dan, what is the thing that you've missed most about football season since it's been gone?
Just the kind of the week to week, having something to look forward to, having something to enjoy on Saturday, and then you get a solid full week of breaking that down and something to look forward to for the following weekend. It just, especially like if there's a season like last year where you're really building to something awesome at the end, like it's, there's not much like it. So, just very excited. We got a nice, like, appetizer last week. Miami, Florida wasn't that great, but it was football. And then Arizona, Hawaii was a blast if you stayed up till like 2:45 in the morning like I did. Really, really fun week zero game out in the islands. So, yeah, very, very stoked to get going here towards the SU Liberty game at 6 p.m. on Saturday.
Yeah, I spent more time with the Villanova Colgate game than any other game on Saturday, to be honest. That wasn't like an intentional thing, just because I feel like I take over every Saturday for like a, you know, 12 to 14 week stretch. So I felt it was only fair that like I didn't plan anything around watching the games. So I didn't watch a ton of the later games, but I did watch the first game of the day that everyone was talking about, the Villanova Colgate game on CBS Sports Network.
That is certainly fair. And you were not alone. About as much buzz for an FCS game as I can remember, which was probably pretty good for that level to kind of get that spotlight.
Yeah, very smart scheduling on their end. But yeah, why don't we go a little bit into Syracuse? I think we can start with the depth chart, which came out today. I feel like there were always a couple surprises here and there, and Dino did not let us down on that front. Notably, the offensive line, I think, looks a little bit different than Weed thought going into this week. Carlos Vettorello and Aaron Service are your starting tackles. Evan Adams and Dakota Davis are your starting guards. Sam Heckel is your starting center, which means that he is healthy enough to go, at least on paper, which is great. You figure anybody who even has like some slight, you know, nicks and bumps is probably going to sit on the bench for this week, if only because, you know, hopefully, you know, the distance between us and Liberty is not that close. You will be able to play a lot of, you know, non-starters. So really, if they're going to miss a game, this opener is not the worst one to miss. Also so that Ryan Alexander and Darius Tisdale are not starters at this moment. So there's a lot of people, though, that think that may change. That was my big, big surprise, I guess. But Dan, what kind of shocked you when you first looked at the depth chart?
Yeah, no, I think the offensive line is the first thing you jump to. It seems like we're kind of in a situation where, because of our versatility in terms of positions, you're kind of going with the best two of three between Servais, Alexander, and Heckel. Obviously, Servais and Heckel can both play center. Servais is starting at left tackle. He can play out there. It's interesting to see him beat out Alexander. And then I guess Vettorello is the other cog in this machine here, because I think we kind of anticipated it to being Servais and Alexander on the outside. Vettorello taking that right tackle spot as a redshirt freshman. I think you can probably say it's a good sign. Like, I think, you know, in an ideal world, your redshirt freshman beats your grad transfer. It's just not usually how it turns out, especially, you know, we had pretty good success going after the grad transfer market last year. But offensive line, like, is one of those things where it could shake itself out, like, a couple weeks into the season. So there's no guarantee it stays this way, but it is an interesting look. It's not what we expected.
I think anytime, you know, a freshman's on the line, you're not necessarily thrilled about it. At the same time, like in this case, since we brought in transfers and the freshmen are still at the top of the depth chart, I think speaks really highly about the talent that Dino Babers been able to bring in. And Vettorello kind of takes the headlines there because he was at the top of the depth chart. That said, you know, over at right tackle spot, right behind Vettorello is Matthew Bergeron, who's a true freshman from up in Canada. So, you know, again, the talent level that Babers and staff have been able to bring in recent years has definitely gone up. I'm really excited to see what this group does in the first couple weeks and maybe see if there's glimmers of being able to get sort of the same production we got last year, especially heading into that Clemson game, which is going to be tough, even with them replacing, you know, their front four.
Yeah. On the other side, I think it looks like we are going to maybe actually see this 4-2-5 that we've been teased with for since last summer. That's what the depth chart's laid out as. You have your Will and your Mike, and then a nickel where Trill Williams is the starting fifth defensive back. And then, as we kind of hinted at last week with the articles that were coming out, Melifonwu is on that second cornerback starting spot across from Christopher Frederick. So we're definitely getting the most out of our very talented secondary, and also Antoine Cordy, who we talked about last week, is like trying to figure out where he'd shake out. He's behind Andre Sisto on the depth chart. It wouldn't surprise me to see him kind of all over the place. I wouldn't be shocked to see him in that nickel role either. Right now, Alan Stritzinger is behind Trey Williams in that role. And we also will probably still see some 4-3 looks because that's what we ended up going with most last year. Obviously, part of that is because the linebackers ended up progressing a lot, and that's still a question mark here. But, you know, if Michael Jones, who is second at the Will spot right now, takes a big step forward, you know, you might see him on the field more than we thought. But it's all, you know, we're not totally sure how it'll shake out until we see a game Saturday, or maybe not even until we're into ACC play here.
Yeah, I mean, knowing Dino, and he did this last year too, you kind of save some of your tricks for that big ACC game to start the year. Last year, that was Florida State. This year, it's Clemson. So I'm sure that if Dino can avoid it, he'd love to be able to keep most of the tricks in the bag. I know we've noticed that Tyrell Richards, while there were a lot of headlines about him, you know, in the offseason at the early going, he's not on the depth chart again, just like he wasn't at the first depth chart of summer camp. I think we're going to see plenty of him, though, whether it's in that 4-3 look or potentially just as like a, you know, rover type. I know this isn't a real defense, but I'd be very curious, knowing that McKinley Williams is out for at least this week, maybe longer, who knows, if SU would just decide to say, like, F it and just run some, like, wacky, you know, like, 3-3-5 or like a 3-2-6, which is, again, is not a defense, and just, like, start, like, throwing some random ideas. If you had a 3-3-5 and then, you know, had Richards kind of come up, you know, as really like that fourth lineman's like flex linebacker, like that probably leaves you susceptible against the pass. But at the same time, like, I don't know, could be a curious look. I'm definitely intrigued to see how they use Richards in particular. Also excited, hopefully, to see a lot more Trill this year. I know he made an impact last year here and there, and we're all really excited about the talent he brings to the table. But I think seeing him more consistently out there is only going to help him and help the defense.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me to see a 3-3-5 look. I think we saw a bit of it last year, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to go back. It's kind of a blur now. But I know in the last couple of years, we've definitely seen a bit of it. And with all the defensive back talent, if like our linebackers step up, it wouldn't be a total shock to see something using that alignment. Although, basically, it seems like we're probably going to be rolling five defensive backs out most of the time. And then obviously the defensive line is farther ahead than the linebacker. So you assume this nickel look, you know, or the 4-2-5 is what makes more sense based on the talent. But, it could also be kind of a game to game thing based on what the other teams bring. Like when we're playing Boston College and they're, you know, running the ball 45 times for 3.5 yards a carry, like you're probably going to want more of a 4-3. And you know, I think we've learned that this defense can kind of be malleable, which is always good. We're not going to like force ourselves into just one hole, and having some positional depth and across the defense aside from linebacker really helps, because you can kind of shape it how you want on a week-to-week basis, and that really worked out well last year.
Agreed. Looking at the other side of the field for this one, Liberty also released their depth chart today. Have we heard if Ryan Willis, the Auburn transfer, is actually going to be able to go? Because I've yet to see anything that indicates whether he is or isn't. I know that he is not on the depth chart for week one right now. That's going to Stephen Calvert. But like I've rarely seen a higher profile transfer from like an SEC school go somewhere, and for us still like not to know his eligibility status.
I'm just now being reminded that he's there, because in everything I've read about Liberty, it's all been about Calvert, who obviously was the starter, I think, all of last year.
Yeah.
I now remember that Ryan Willis is there, and he's like a former 4-star guy. He played at Auburn. You would think he'd be a guy who could challenge for playing time, but yeah, I have no idea. I don't know what his status is at all. I'm going to do a cursory look here. But he hasn't really come up in any of the kind of preview material I've read for this game.
Yeah, I mean, I looked on Google, I looked on Twitter, I have scoured the internet. I've yet to see anything about him.
He was Virginia Tech. He wasn't Auburn.
Oh, you're right. Was it Ryan Willis? No, sorry. Who is the guy? Who is it? Is it not Ryan? It's not Ryan Willis. That's Malik Willis. That's why I couldn't find it.
Yeah, okay. So we had the school right. We had the last name right. We did not have the first name right, because there are multiple Willises playing quarterback in the Southeast.
Yeah, that's my fault. But we still don't know if he's playing.
He was seeking immediate eligibility,
and there he was. Yeah. This is odd.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything past like July 9th, July 10th, which is when he made his decision. That's very strange.
Yeah, oh, super weird.
4 hours ago, there was something from the Liberty site, Sea of Red. This is great radio.
We're going to figure this out.
No update as of today. They expect it by Wednesday. So yeah, his waiver has been cleared, because and this goes whether you're Syracuse or Liberty or Alabama or whomever. Not if you're Michigan, but if you're like anyone else, the NCAA will not do anything under a timetable that makes sense. Like, you know, we're playing a football game on Saturday. Maybe we can find out if our SEC transfer quarterback can play. Not like, even if it's no, at least you have something. Like, this is ridiculous. And obviously this is like, if anything, it probably benefits Syracuse. It's still ridiculous.
Yeah, this is odd. I know, too, it seems like they are going to be missing. There's a lot of question marks at receiver for them, which is not going to bode well if you want to keep up with SU. It seems, I mean, I'm looking at Sea of Red as well. Looks like right now Noah Frith is out with a fractured foot. Caleb Coleman, CJ Yarbrough are questionable. That's not, again, a great thing for them right off the bat. And then it looks like they've been able to make some JUCO adds on both sides of the ball. Just to kind of help with depth and the move up from FCS to FBS ball. So again, I'm pretty confident in SU's ability to win here. There's some Liberty fans that are very confident in their ability to win. I've seen like here and there, just like murmurs of like, oh yeah, here's just one to like watch as like a potential, like, you know, upset because it's a weird game on the road. But I saw a couple different Liberty fans like really like gassing them up. And I think it's kind of entertaining, not to say it couldn't happen in a million years, but more just that I don't know if I'd be so confident if it was our first FBS game and we hadn't really looked all that great for the last few years. And we were definitely going up against a top 25 team with superior talent. But hey, crazier things have happened. I just hope that crazier thing is not what occurs on Saturday.
Yeah. So I think if you're a Liberty fan, and God forbid, if you're a Liberty fan, you have
God would forbid.
Yes. If you're a Liberty fan, you are banking on God forgiveness, but that's besides the football point. There's reason to be optimistic. Hugh Freeze is a really good coach. Assuming he's able to kind of clean his resume up there at Liberty, he's probably going to be gone in a couple of years. So you enjoy him while you got him. This is your time of doing the Bobby Petrino Western Kentucky thing. He's raised the talent level there. He signed like a pretty good class for a G5, much better than they have signed in their like short FBS history, better than Turner Dill was signing. And Turner Dill didn't do a bad job there. So, like, I think there's reasons to be optimistic. This just isn't the – if Syracuse is, you know, what we expect them to be, like a solid bowl team, maybe better. This just isn't the spot where, like, your moving forward program that just signed some, like, decent freshmen and got, like, a handful of JUCOs. Like, this isn't the spot where you land a bit upset win. That's in a couple of years, probably. So I understand why they're optimistic about the program as a whole. I think saying you're going to – beat like a solid ACC bowl team that could be as good as like the second best team in the ACC. And obviously that's the big question. Like, you don't know how good Syracuse is going to be, but like, even if Syracuse is at the bottom end of expectations without like completely falling apart, that's a big ask. So I get being bullish on like the direction they're heading in general, just because you made a very, very splashy coach hire. You're recruiting well. You might have a former Auburn quarterback at some point here. I get all that. It's just like, take a step back and like maybe respect that there is a process here and not just like you have Hugh Freeze and you're going to go beat Alabama. Like, it's just not how it works.
Yeah, they're a puzzling group for so many reasons. I won't even get into them. But yeah, I think that, you know, this, if this was year one for Babers or even like year two, or if like the beginning of last year and we didn't know what Babers was capable of at SU, I'd say, yeah, like maybe like there's some sort of concern there, but like realistically, like there is just, again, it's too much of a talent gap. SU is proven. I mean, I know Tommy DeVito is a first time starter, but he played plenty last year. This team is experienced. They're driven. I think that this is, you know, those are like stupid intangibles in some ways, but in others, like, this is just a very good football team, and I'd be shocked if they're not ready to play in this one. I think if anyone is circling an early season kind of upset, I think the Maryland game is the much larger, concern, and that's something that we'll talk about next week as we get, you know, more into what should be, again, an exciting football season for Syracuse. One other thing I guess I wanted to talk about before we hit halftime, our why Syracuse finishes with a given record series. As everyone recalls, my dog James was the reigning champion for most accurate prediction on the internet. He picked 8-4 last year. Syracuse went 9-3. Now he went 10-2 this year. So let's see what happens. He picked us to beat Clemson. So I'm feeling pretty good about his prediction so far.
So what you're telling us is that James was a disloyal idiot like the rest of us. I mean, he was too win shy.
Well, he refused to pick the bowl game. So admittedly, he could have gone with 9-4 and he would have only been one off.
Yeah, still shy.
Let's still not shy. Give him too much credit. I mean, when you consider that the rest of us at 6-6 is kind of the ceiling.
No, it's like, let's all hope he has the same short prediction and we go 11-1. Or I guess maybe 12-1. That'd be fine. That'd be decent.
Yeah, this year he said 11-3, which included a trip to the ACC championship game where we lost to Virginia, which would be a fate that honestly I don't want, if only because of how Virginia fans have reacted so humbly around the championship that they won in men's basketball. I don't really want to experience what happens in football should they beat us in a championship game. And then he has us beating LSU in the Orange Bowl, though, so props to him.
That'd be such a beating Clemson and LSU and losing to Virginia, and who else does he have us losing to?
Western Michigan. Western Michigan because he's scared of horses.
Oh God,
that's the most Syracuse result ever. First of all,
that's
second glitch in the matrix.
That's the ultimate letdown spot. Is that Western Michigan game, and it's a very, very fiery Tim Lester.
I mean, the submarine is, he goes deep without warning, to quote one XFL card.
Which is still in my closet, I think. I don't know if I threw it away. I did like a spring cleaning. I think I still have it. I might have thrown it away because I looked at him like, oh, he means nothing to me anymore.
Maybe Tim Lester's going to suit up for what the what's the New York team called?
Oh, the like the Emperors or something.
Oh, the Guardians.
The Guardians. They're like gargoyles. They should have made the gargoyles.
Yeah, and every team is just like, you know, like patriotism signaling.
It really is. Except for the Seattle Dragons.
Although that's dope. Dragons really need to be a better, like, more used as a mascot.
Yeah, but they just like so blatantly stole UAB's logo. It's pretty hilarious.
They also blatantly stole the Houston Oilers logo.
Yeah, well, that's even worse.
At least that one is just the logo.
Maybe they were just going through defunct franchises and they didn't get the memo that UAB was back.
They went on, well, you know, knowing them, they probably just like went on Chris Kremer. And they're like, if we just change the colors, who's going to notice?
They changed the width of the dragon. Like, they made it slightly skinnier.
They did it with a Dallas team, too, where they stole the Arena League's Dallas Desperados logo.
Yeah, they all look like they were made in the Madden Creative team. Like, even the color schemes are bad. And they're like color schemes that like an 11-year-old, like 11-year-old playing Madden who doesn't really understand how like what colors work together. So he's like, yeah, I'm going to make this black with like some weird accents, but that they still like get very confused. Like the New York team's like logo is so bad. It's just, none of it makes any sense.
Agreed. This has been your XFL podcast. I guess we're just calling it Extreme Footcast, where we talk about the XFL, feet, and blind patriotism.
You act like there's not a market for this.
I know there's a market for it.
Unfortunately, the XFL portion is the least marketable part of that.
We could just come up with personas. Welcome to the danger zone. I'm the Wildcat.
When does the XFL actually start?
The week after the Super Bowl.
God, that's so
they do it. They're doing that thing that everyone else has tried and doesn't work.
I think that's exactly what the AAF, I think, was not maybe not right after, but like soon, like it was probably a couple weeks after.
I think the original XFL was this.
I was gonna say we should like it'd be just basically ripping off like a full cast bit, but we should consider trying just doing an unannounced XFL podcast sometime in the spring.
Yeah, that'd be a good time, actually.
Maybe the week of the NCAA tournament instead of a basketball podcast.
just as everyone would expect with this show.
How mad would people be it says it's basketball. Like, oh, we're talking about Syracuse as the 4 seed in the East, going up against Liberty again somehow, the 13, and like we're going to break it all down, talk about Elijah Hughes's first team All-ACC campaign, but then it's just all XFL talk. Except we're not going to watch any XFL, so we're not going to actually know what we're talking about either.
Well, we might if Eric Dungy plays.
That's true. I will absolutely watch Eric Dungy play in the XFL. I'll watch Eric Dungy do anything.
True. We discovered on Twitter that the watch Eric Dungy jump over a crane idea was, what was the
Big
hell?
Crane.
What the hell was the name? There was somebody had a great name. Oh, it was Dungy Jumping.
Yes,
was the name of the show. I said, like, we absolutely need this on the ACC network. You can't tell me they have better programming options available.
No. So the question is Dungy going to be a gargoyle or a guardian or whatever, or a dragon as a native Pacific Northwesterner?
You know, I feel like we're going to do like territorial rights here with these players.
I think that is how they're doing it, actually. Yes. Yeah,
so that's super smart.
He's probably a guardian.
Hooray.
Which is not the appropriate mascot for Dungy. He's never darted anything, including his own personal well-being.
Or his loins.
But here we are. I will watch the hell out of Dungy Ball.
I'll do. Yeah.
That's like the one thing you could do. And also, they need to get like however many Syracuse players they want to get on that team. Like, obviously, Amba's hurt, but like Steve Ishmael, get him back in the mix.
I think he's hurt.
Oh, God damn it.
Andrew Luck, I'm sure he's available.
I love that conspiracy theory. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He's going to give up his 20, like whatever millions available still
to play for his dad.
To play for his dad's shitty league. That's definitely
the same guy. The same guy who said that Air Force was more valuable to the Big East than Syracuse was. That guy.
God, Oliver Luck's awful.
Expert businessman.
Get Irv Phillips on the team. He was in the AAF, so he deserves a shot. Yeah, let's just make this happen.
Yeah, get Amari Palmer's already in the wrestling stratosphere.
He's in the family. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, this will work.
Somehow we just talked ourselves into watching the XFL after making fun of the XFL 3 minutes ago.
We're here. Let's
like we have nothing else to talk about this week.
I know. But we already said this is a weird week. In any case, let's hear from our sponsor. And we're back with some beer. Dan, what have you been drinking?
Dan, not a ton of new things, but I did enjoy some of the Subliminal Verses from Lock City that I've been sitting in my fridge for a while. Luckily, they taste great still. It's a stout, so no real like aging concern there. And then I had some Tasty BC, some Superhero Sidekicks IPA, which was delicious.
Very nice. On my end, went out for some happy hour on Friday, grabbed a Picnic Lightning from Broward West, their brewery over here in LA. It was an unfiltered West Coast IPA, so it was pretty good. Had, I'm sure you guys probably have seen this on shelves over by you, but the Stone Notorious POG Berliner Weiss is excellent. Literally just tastes like juice, but super, super refreshing. Had from State Brewing around here, Tiny Motor, New England Pale Ale. Had a 1903 lager from Craftsman Brewing, which I usually enjoy when I see it on draft. Modern Time Spaceways, Hazy IPA. And then Burn Daylight Brewing, which I mentioned like a month or so ago. Down Lomita, I grabbed a can of their Pines IPA, which is pretty good.
Very nice. I don't know if I've seen that Stone, but I'll keep a lookout for it because, you know, it is all over.
Yeah, I would highly recommend that one. Like I said, it's super refreshing, really good. I mean, it's not as like addicting as Grapefruit Sculpin, but definitely probably going to get a six pack of it. I just grabbed like a, you know, whatever the hell that like 16, 17 ounce can, whatever they sell. Grab one of those first to try it out. Yeah, I'll be grabbing more for sure.
Very nice.
So I guess with the rest of our time here, and, you know, we don't have to make this like a huge episode necessarily. Another topic I wanted to bring up was our new feature. Are you there, Troy? It's me, Facebook. Now, for for those who are unaware, Facebook is terrible. And the Facebook page for any site or just business or person will be terrible. And this blog is no exception. The people on there are not readers, to my knowledge. They act like the articles don't exist, and they only serve to let them argue with one another about things that don't matter. My favorite comment from this one was probably the following. While I don't believe this will actually happen, we're spelling out how it could. We start with the fact that there are a lot of toss-ups on the schedule, and should most of them fall in the wrong direction, there's a path to get there. Even if that's not the one we want to see, then why write the article? Make zero sense. Go Orange.
Oh, God.
That one was great. The other one was, oh, why would I read this cancer? Which, if that's not a ringing endorsement of this blog, I don't know what is.
I enjoy the guy who got really mad about the team not tucking their shirts in Italy.
Oh yeah, he was definitely a respects the troops guy. And then
also, I'd rather lose to Kansas than beat Niagara is perfect.
That was also great. I think the best one actually might have been the comment on the article about it, about from Sean's 9-3 article, which was. In all caps, enough of the crap, let them play, and what happens, happens.
That's also just wonderful. Like, there should be no content made about sports ever. Like, the games, yeah. The games and the results are all that matter. We shouldn't ever discuss, like, what may happen or what did happen. We should never discuss any ancillary things around the school. It's just results, baby. We just want the numbers. You actually shouldn't even watch the games. You should just check the stores, but not on the internet because it doesn't matter. You should just like maybe drive to a, maybe there should be a big bulletin board somewhere in each town and you just look at the stores and then you drive home and then you just digest that 34-14 win that Syracuse had over Liberty and just like, you just come to your own feelings about that.
I agree. I think that facts only blogs are the only blogs. They're the only opinions that matter either. Because obviously the only opinions are made of facts.
I love people so much.
Challenge me. Dan, what would be the most surprising thing for you to happen to Syracuse football this year? Good, bad, or otherwise?
The most surprising thing would be like winning the national championship. I think that would go just ahead of like a winless season.
How about the most surprisingly reasonable thing?
Oh, okay. I think dipping back down to like 4-8 or 3-9 would be pretty surprising. I don't see with how with the returning talent on this team, just acknowledging there are some question marks, but they're not crazy question marks. They're college football question marks like that every team has somewhere. Like Alabama has linebacker questions. It's like obviously their linebackers are 5 stars, ours are 3 stars, but still like our question marks for Syracuse this year are very much like grounded in like what teams deal with every season. So considering all the talent and all the depth that we are returning from a 10-win team and a quarterback who at the very like has won like pretty big college football games already, obviously kept us from losing a bad North Carolina team and then beat a talented if very flawed Florida State team like a drum, I'd be very surprised if we slipped back below, I would say even bowl eligibility. Like I think sits and sits should be the floor for this team.
Barring a DeVito injury, yeah, I have to agree.
Barring a DeVito injury would change the outlook. Like that's like even beyond the linebackers and some other things, like I think the quarterback depth is the single biggest concern just because like it's very like we don't even have a like we have nothing proven behind him. So that'd be very troubling. But if he stays healthy, I struggle to think that this team doesn't eclipse, you know, probably a solid sits to 8-4. Outside of that, like, you know, 9 or 10 wins seem like more likely than 4 or 5 to me.
Yeah, I think the numbers say that 10 wins are just as likely as 5, which is fun. And that's an entertaining place to live for a football program.
Especially for regular season. Like, that's, I think you'll sign for that.
Yeah, usually. I think for me, I don't know if this would be surprising for most like long tenured Syracuse fans or even short tenured Syracuse fans. But I feel like it's well within the realm of possibility that Syracuse goes 10-2, but misses the Orange Bowl because LSU is ranked higher and because Notre Dame's like steals the Orange Bowl for like their once in a like 6-year stretch that they're allowed to do so because they're also ranked similarly.
Yeah, that'd be very unfortunate. We need to root for Notre Dame to like fall below. Like we need to like obviously don't play them this year, which helps. We need Notre Dame to like only win 8 games. That'd be very nice. If we're going to challenge for the Orange Bowl, which is a big question, we need to do a lot. But in that case, like I shouldn't have to convince you too hard to root against Notre Dame this year, but you should probably root against Notre Dame this year if we have like really lofty expectations.
Yeah, for a refresher for everybody, the qualifications for the Orange Bowl, 2 out of every 3 years, is just be the highest ranked ACC team in the college football playoff. If the top ACC team goes to the playoff, be the top ranked team in the playoff rankings. If the top team in the ACC finishes in the top 4, and lately that's been Clemson. So if Clemson goes to the top 4, the Orange Bowl, 2 out of every 3 years, is available to and an automatic bid for the top ACC team, unless 1 out of every 6 years, I believe, Notre Dame can take that spot if they are ranked higher and or within one win of the team they're up against. So ideally, If Syracuse goes 9-3, everyone will probably be pretty excited. And then if Notre Dame is 10-2 or 9-3 or even 8-4, 8-4 would be tough just based on a rankings thing. But realistically, like if Notre Dame's ranked around the same place or ranked above, like there's not necessarily going to be this. It's depending on who else is in that ranking area. There's a very real chance that SU gets left out. It also depends on what happens with the SEC and Big Ten. The likelihood, though, that SU is ahead of the top, you know, non-playoff Big Ten, SEC, and Notre Dame team seems pretty unlikely. And really, if given how the ACC's looked of late, where it's been pretty top-heavy with just Clemson and like us hanging around last year and maybe this year, like I feel like the Orange Bowl organizers would love to maybe take everybody up on that part of the arrangement.
Yeah, I mean, I think realistically, if you can take Notre Dame when they're really good, and like in this scenario, like Notre Dame missing the playoff but finishing top 10 or so, or top 15 even, like you're going to take Notre Dame over most teams. Their fans are all over the place. They'll travel pretty much wherever. They'll get beat because that's what they do in the postseason. But they'll still be there and spend money. So yeah, like it'll be hard to blame them for taking Notre Dame over Syracuse in this situation. It'll just kind of stink because this would be the second year in a row where, like, you know,
the Orange Bowl.
And for reasons, you know, I would say, like, not even that related to us, just like, I think we've done a lot to prove ourselves as a fan base over the last year, especially with that bowl showing where we, obviously, West Virginia fans were kind of checked out for a number of reasons, but like, that doesn't really mean that we weren't going to show up, and we showed up in pretty big numbers right to the Camping World Bowl. I think that's going to really help us going forward. Hopefully, if we do get left out of the Orange Bowl, obviously, like we always, the Pinstripe Bowl, like we always talk about it, like it's this like horrible thing. I think people are going to get like a little disillusioned if we end up there at 9 or 10 wins. I hope
we very well might,
because it just makes so much sense for us. I hope we do go if we, I hope people show up if we go. I would rather our next Pinstripe Bowl appearance be like a 7 or 8 win team. I think people will be fine with that. 9 or 10, I think people want to do something more unique, more like special, even though, and we talk about it all the time, the Pinstripe Bowl is a higher ranked bowl than it was when we've gone. So, right. Yeah, hopefully we don't have any situation where we really get screwed. Last year we did a bit, but then we really like, it could have been worse, and we ended up getting that bowl that people thought might go to what was the team that they thought might steal it?
NC State, and then yes. The Gator Bowl opened up, and it allowed both of us to go because they were convinced, I think, and this is, you know, partially Wildhack and some other folks convincing them that the Syracuse West Virginia crowd was going to be better than like an NC State Oklahoma State or something like that crowd.
Which I don't know how that shook out, but it wasn't our fault if it wasn't. Like, we had more fans there than anyone expected.
We were top 10. I think the game was top 10 in terms of attendance, like, other than the playoff games.
The Gator Bowl last year, attendance was 38,000, so Wildhack was right. and we were over 50.
Yeah, I mean, it was a well-attended game, I think.
It was 41. Yeah, so it was not that. It was a decent amount more. But it was, you know, a couple thousand more, but that's, you know, the couple thousand more were coming from the Northeast largely versus right. NC State versus A&M, which, you know, A&M has way more fans than either us or West Virginia, and NC State is the most local of any of those teams. So, yeah, I think Wildhack did not lie. and it was largely because of Syracuse fans. Syracuse fans packed that thing.
Yeah, I'm psyched about that. And I think people need to remember with the Pinstripe Bowl, like when we last went was 2012, so it really was like a while ago at this point.
Yeah,
and on top of that, like the tie-ins have changed so much. Like back then, it was like the fifth or sixth place, like Big 12 team against, you know, like whatever regionally adjacent, you know, Big East team. Now it's like the fourth or fifth best Big 10 team versus like a, you know, it's a tier two game in the ACC, and tier two games also include the Russell Athletic Bowl, or not the Russell, the Camping World Bowl's in there. The Sun Bowl,
in a weird Belt Bowl. Way. It's like tier 1.5. It's in a weird spot.
Yeah, ACC does like a weird thing, but they do try to both create variants and group teams regionally where they can. So really, like, if we make a bowl in 4 out of 5 years, one of those four, we're going to be in the Pinstripe Bowl, even if we won 10 games, all of them.
Yeah, I think it's going to be easier for people to deal with if we are in a cycle where we're making a bowl 75% of the time and we're going to the Pinstripe every 3 or 4 years, because then you're getting a lot of different bowl experiences because they're not going to want to send us every year, versus like we went back to back, two of our bowl games in a row were Pinstripe, and then we had the Texas Bowl, which was kind of weird, and then people thought we were going to start there again, and it just seemed like this is going to become like a kind of like fate, like, oh, Syracuse is bowl eligible, here's where they'll go. And last year the attendance really helped. I think honestly this year the season ticket situation, which has been so impressive. Like, we've faced a lot of questions about our fan base, some rightfully, some wrongfully. I think we've answered a lot of them, and I didn't honestly expect one 10-win season to spur the turnaround we've had, where we're going to have our highest attendance in, like, 25 years probably this year.
You guys showed the hell up.
Yeah, no, and I expected us to probably sell another 4,000 or 5,000 season tickets, and we are going to probably push 10. That's nuts. And then that's after a really, really good bowl showing. So I think the Syracuse fan base has really done a number on, like, rejecting any, like, oh, this is a bad fan base, this is a school that only cares about basketball. I think it's really gone, like, oh, no, they just really needed a reason to believe in this team. And, like, a couple 8-win seasons were nice, and they helped a little bit. But when they're followed up by, you know, crashing back to earth, you obviously lose all of that goodwill. 10 wins is really something. Playing Clemson two really, really tough years in a row is something. I'm personally impressed by what a difference that season made. I thought it would take a couple of those years to really get to where the progress we've had in 1 year, and obviously some credit goes to like the ticket office and SUA, who has really capitalized on it. But yeah, like, it's been very encouraging.
Yeah, I mean, if any non-Syracuse fans happen to be listening, like, you know, 9,000 or so season tickets, like, doesn't sound like a ton, but when you consider the fact that 9,000 new season tickets in a venue that fits less than 50,000 fans, that's huge.
It's also like, you know, schools don't all sell the same, like number. I saw there was like Rutgers fans making fun. It was like Rutgers had like 30,000 season tickets a couple years ago or whatever, and it's been like sliced in half since because of, but like, Rutgers, it's a state school. It's a much bigger school. They're selling to, I'm guessing, a lot more like just local, like things tied into the state. You can't really compare it. And then the raw attendance number, Syracuse had more people. So, like, just as Rutgers has more season ticket holders than Syracuse, even though they've had losing seasons, like, Syracuse is only choosing to sell a certain percentage as season tickets. And you can't really compare apples to apples.
Yeah,
apples to oranges. literally.
Rotten apples to oranges.
Yes. So, like, you know, it's just always going to be a very unique thing because we're a private school, because you have people, you know, it's in a you know, decent sized metropolitan area, but you, to really start to hit capacity, you have to push like the Rochester tickets, you know, the Utica, the Binghamton, even Albany. So it's just like a different situation versus like, yeah, if we were an hour and a half from New York City and our alumni were all right here, yeah, we could probably sell 30,000 season tickets more easily, or 16,000 season tickets, like has been the case more recently for them. But yeah, so either way, selling 9,000 more or 9,000 is really impressive and very commendable. And hopefully, I mean, hitting that 10,000 number doesn't even seem that ridiculous. Like, the push continues. I assume they're going to sell seasons up until the season starts, and then they'll probably start to sell some multi-game packs, especially if things start hot. I can't even imagine what will happen if we beat Clemson. Like, they might sell out the rest of the year. Like, that's not that crazy.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I shudder to think what happens next. I think we'll get to plenty of Clemson in a couple of weeks, as that's going to be arguably, I mean, even if God forbid something happened against Maryland, I still think it's going to be one of the more anticipated games at the Dome in, you know, the last couple decades. So I'm psyched about that. I can't wait to cover everything around that game. Dan, before we go, a quick prediction. What do you think happens and why against Liberty?
I'm gonna drink the Kool-Aid here. I feel good about it. I think Liberty, I think they're going to be a reasonably decent G5 opponent, but I think this team is going to come in motivated. They're going to want to prove that last year wasn't a fluke. Not that there's like a lot of talk of that, but you know, I think there are still some question marks over like, okay, where are they going to go from this one, you know, blippy season? And like, I don't think getting motivated for week one should be that hard for any team. It's just like, you haven't played in 8 months. DeVito is going to want to go out there and really prove himself. So I'm going to take, I'm going to go Syracuse 38, Liberty 14.
All right. Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I think this team's going to be pretty jacked up. Obviously having a number next to your name even more so. I think that there's a lot of veteran guys who want to go out with a bang. I think there's a lot of new guys who want to show themselves. I'm going to go a little bit higher scoring. I think this one ends up being 48-24 in favor of the Orange. I think most of that is, you know, Liberty just kind of hanging around for a bit, scoring enough points to keep it respectable-ish. But overall, like, SU ends up, you know, closing the door with reasonable amount of time remaining. I don't think we'll be like thrilled about the result, but I don't think we're going to be disappointed by it either. Fully expect SU to take home the victory here.
Yeah, can't wait. It's felt like a very long time since the Tampa World Bowl, and obviously the expectations have been unlike anywhere where I think either of us have seen them, at least in recent memory. So yeah, just I think it's a nice first opponent too. Obviously, aside from like the off-field issues, like the level of opponent where it's not like a total, it's not like an FCS game where you could win 60-0 and not learn anything. I think it'll be enough of a challenge to like we'll pick up on some stuff, kind of like the Western Michigan game last year, which was a circus for a number of reasons, but
the dumbest game.
Hopefully not as weirdly dramatic as that one, but hopefully the offense looks similar at least through three quarters, through the first, second, and fourth quarter, as it did to that one.
It actually reminds me that you and I were going to do the research on that like dumb game thing that we just never did this offseason.
Oh yeah, we should set like a reminder of some sort to do that for next year for like May.
Maybe there will be no more new dumb games.
Oh, that's false. Like, we're not a dumb game this year. We already said Duke is probably the dumb game.
Yeah,
that's the look ahead dumb game spot. Although one of the key factors of dumb games is that you don't actually know when they're coming. No, we should definitely do that in May. Just have like the 10 dumbest games of like at least our 10 years watching the Orange. You really have to see them to know them.
Oh yeah, but when you see them, you know them.
So I think it probably has to be like G-Rob through Babers.
G-Rob didn't, as far as dumb games go, I think G-Rob had like a couple.
I think his dumb games are the wins.
His dumb games are the Louisville win.
Absolutely a dumb game.
Yeah, the Louisville win, the Wyoming near loss, the Notre Dame win.
The Iowa game,
which would be the only loss. And those are really it. Like, I think those are the games.
Yeah.
Marone had his own brand of dumb game.
The Minnesota game, the first Marone game was a dumb game.
Yeah. Marone had a lot. Yeah, he had a ton, to be honest. Like, he's going to be the prevailing name on this list.
The Louisville game in 2009 might be the topper. The 10-9, let's never speak of this again.
Yeah. Rutgers 2012.
Rutgers 2012, a lot of the 2012 games.
Yeah. Most 2012 is a dumb season.
Yeah. We were threading such a needle those two bowl seasons and some of those wins. It was like, it was super thrilling and fun, but I much prefer like beating teams by 21.
Yeah.
It's way easier on everyone. You don't have to like convince yourself that you won a game. So yeah, we should definitely do that in the off season, which luckily is very far away now because it's week one.
Yeah. Schaefer's dumb games were like, were they like save face losses?
Oh, God. Where
it was like, oh, we lost to Clemson 16-6, and you can't remember like anything about the game.
The AJ Long game. The AJ Long game, absolutely a dumb game. We should have won that game. If we had like a Babers C+ offense, we would have won that game by 2 touchdowns.
That game, the LSU loss, the other Clemson loss. Such all dumb games. Yeah.
Any game where a Syracuse kicker or punter ran for yardage was a dumb game.
Oh, that, yeah, the Villanova game.
Villanova, absolutely. One of the top dumb names.
Yeah, because you get the automatic dumb factor of starting quarterback pushes somebody, gets kicked out. Now let's see what happens.
Oh, my God.
Christ.
It's almost like unfortunate that such a high percentage can qualify. We really need to whittle it down to like top 10 over.
Well, then I think what we need is like three different articles, and there's like different varieties of dumb games.
Yeah, they really do have it. There's a spectrum.
Yeah, for sure. There's like frustratingly dumb, hilariously dumb, and then there's like mind-numbingly dumb. All right. With that in mind, Dan, anything else before we go?
No, I'm just really hoping that Saturday is not joining this list.
I would very much agree for many, many reasons. Anyway, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. You rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Megaphone, on Spotify, on Stitcher, on numerous other apps and services. And go orange.
Go orange.